Well, it's another exciting week, and I don't know if this is really Cohen Meander or not, but we'll act like it is for now. This is Jason Nemro, and you're listening to Cohen Meander. And, I'm trying to just kind of get through the days. And I think I'm making the people at my present job kind of crazy. And I think the feedback that I'm basically getting is just relax. That I'm causing people more trouble than they really want to have. And everybody complains about things, and things grind along slowly. It's like, well, there it is. I'm just flummoxed by the fact that I'm being paid so much to do so little. So, I need to not get weird about it. Work on other things, work on other projects. And that's pretty much it. Right now, I can't believe I'm spending time trying to fix a stupid logo. For some reason, something has gotten goofed up in the works of this system that I'm using. It just wasn't working on the piece of equipment that I had. It kept killing itself. And I really couldn't figure out why it was killing itself. It'll come to me, I'm sure, at some point. But for right now, it's like, don't get weird about it. Don't let it get to you. Which is hard, because I want to do a good job. I want to do a good job, even when it's not, even when I'm not getting paid to do a good job, I want to do a good job. Is that a good impulse? So, these are bizarre times. If I can tell you my honest assessment of it, they are bizarre times. It is the, I am getting a good, a good study in what I deem to be over-managed processes. And it's not anybody's, it's not due to any ill use, ill practice. It's not due to any of this stuff. Is progress being made? Yes, but slowly and painfully. People won't even touch things until they're ready. And you go, that's what the system says to do. We're working a system. Oh. It's just not my time yet. The only problem is this is really the only task they have assigned to me. And it's bizarre because I'm really not doing anything. And I much prefer less managed things. I don't know how it works up in heaven. I don't know if it's some large, well-oiled machine. Everybody, there is one scripture. And boy, let me tell you, it gets harped on a lot. You know, house of this, a house of order, the house of this, a house of God. And it has been expanded wildly, and I think probably inappropriately. You only need a certain amount of organization. If you get it too organized, well, it falls apart. Anyway, so I'm having that experience. I didn't know if I wanted to write an essay about it and put it out there. I'm going for a position. I've done a lot of teaching on the side over the years. Well, I don't know if it's been a lot, but I've done some. And as I have been getting, as I got together the cover letter for, it's a job at UNM Valencia, and I would be working at it out of the boat. But the interesting thing about it is it's very much the kind of thing that you can do for quite a while, you know, as in the amount of time you have to invest in it. The industry that I'm in and the way that it's gone is very, well, it comes with the territory of being very systematic, and it screams for management. And you just go, you know, it says, I'm just this fella. You go, you know, you keep your plates spinning on several things. And it's like, we do kind of a rough time doing that. And I think that Lisa and I need to play my auto harp, and Lisa sings better than I do. Lisa and I need to sing together. It seems like every time I see, you know, what I think of my mind is like hillbillies out in the back pasture. They've got a still going. I don't know if they steal the grain that goes in it. I have no idea. Whatever. They've got some stills running. I guess they run moonshine for money. You know, I don't know what they do, but they only seem to do just enough to get by. And everybody looks at them and says, What a bunch of de-evolved hicks. I can't say that I don't get caught up in that way of looking at things too sometimes. And I have to step back and go, you know what? But they seem to have more fun. They seem to have more joy. It's funny. I'm looking out here on the interstate today, and you know what? Usually, I'm dodging a lot of trucks. All the time. And today, I see nothing. I've got one car, and I see another car that we just passed was pulled over by a policeman. And other than that, there may be a couple of trucks way up in front of me, but really not that much. People have been talking about the fact that traffic on the roads, especially truck traffic, has been going down. Everybody says, oh, we need these driverless trucks. You go, maybe we don't, because there's just not a lot of truck traffic going on. Anyway, wow. So this guy get ahead of us a bit. So I'm sorry, I got distracted by that, except to say it's really quite interesting. I don't know if I've hit kind of a lull, and I often do. I think I've got, you know, and I don't know if it's just my perception, that I kind of put out a big aura that says, stay away from me. And I don't know what that does for the, it's, what's it called? It's CTE. I forget what the C stands for. Technical information. Technical education. And it mostly has to do with teaching people a trade work. So the kind of work I'm doing right now, for the best and worst of it, you know, we're going to sit down and we're going to teach it some. But it's real low grade. It's made for the little gut workers. And you go, yeah. Says, have you done a lot of gut work? Says, done a lot of gut work. But then at some point, I stopped doing gut work. Anyway, so I'm thinking about that kind of stuff a little bit, along with this whole, you know, I was just listening to something that was slightly, and I just get a little bit of this, slightly about how mechanistic we're becoming. Socialism and communism are the outgrowths of this kind of weird specialization that really, I don't know. I think to a large extent we're getting over-socialized. We are overworking problems. And for all the mechanisms that we set up to try to, it's not really preventing problems, but being able to react, I don't know if it's quickly, but being able to have kind of a programmed reaction to things, I never really got around to using the program. I would just fix the problem that was on the ground. And it's really interesting. Practically bizarre interesting. However, things are the way they are. Things proceed the way they proceed. Some logos just become the logos of whatever. Okay. Finally caught up to a few trucks. But I'm still stuck behind this fella. I think I want to get past him. I don't like being bunched up in a group. And let me tell you, I've been to places. People have bad traffic, or lots of traffic. You get accustomed to just being bunched up, and people just start looking at the butts of other people, and that's what they do. They're just following the group. And the sad part is, if you're like that, if you don't get with the right group, you'll follow yourself right to Hades, destruction, hell, whatever you want to call it. And you'll just go, you know, how is it in The Man for All Seasons. Norfolk says, you know, when it's time to sign the act of succession. Of course, it says other things too. And Thomas More won't sign it. He says, why don't you do it with all the rest of us? You know, it's disproportionate. Do it for fellowship. It says, and when I'm gone to hell for doing, that's what Thomas More says. Bad paraphrase. When I go to hell for doing what I do, will you come with me for fellowship? And you know what? I think we've answered that question. The question is practically, yes. You know, a lot of people say, well, you got to go to bars. And you go, why do you have to go to a drinking bar? And they go, well, it's because that's where you're gonna find some fun and fellowship with other people. I remember, I think the guy's name was Mitch. And he was a sing-along guy. In fact, he had kind of a television program. And it was singing along with Mitch. And he just had his guitar up there, and he would sing just the songs that people had been singing for hundreds of years. At least, you know, they were called old standbys back in the day. Not that popular songs would come up, but it was nothing like it is today, where it's all supposed to be new and interesting. Thousands and thousands of people are supposed to follow you. Today, we only have like a few. Taylor Swift or somebody like that. Beyonce, who everybody listens to. It used to be a thing. It used to be a mass thing, and now it's become kind of a niche thing. There's a few mass things, but by and large, no. At least, not that interests me. You know, I was into music as a teenager. I had the songs that I liked, the musicians that I liked. I did it pretty much autistically. You know. But anyway, you know, these were the kinds of things that were supposed to bring us together, is singing together, things like that. And I'm thinking that Lisa and I need to do this more. I've gotten my instrument. I got a cheap auto harp a while back, but it was very unsatisfying because of all of the chords I couldn't do with it. You can only do a small subset of things, and if there was a song you wanted to do, chances are it really wouldn't work unless it was just really simple. But then just, let me see, it's just been the last little bit here. I decided to get a Z chord, or it was an Omnichord from Suzuki, and it is an electronic auto harp, for the a lack of a better term for it. It's supposed to, those guys try to style it as kind of like a guitar, but it works so much more like an auto harp. From my old school days. And the great part was, it was an instrument that really didn't take much to use at all. And, that brings to mind Mark Gunn. He he has an interesting an interesting progression of life. He was, when he was a young guy, he was kind of a long-haired Rastafarian sort of guy, and he got into the auto harp, and he was part of a Ren Faire band, and he used to do a lot of songs about cats with this band. Now he also went on, he did solo. You have to understand that this was all done in utter obscurity, but he made enough to do stuff. I vaguely think that he has a child, but I don't get the impression particularly that he is married. Anyway, so he was with his grand, it was like the Bradigan Bards, and I think that was mostly their stint, was doing Ren Faires and stuff like that. Renaissance Faires. Those were really, really popular. Once upon a time, a lot of places had them. And then it kind of wound back to just a handful of places, I think, now. I don't think it's quite as widespread as it once was. Some of them travel a little bit, but they've usually happened around population centers, you know, which is right. You know, people say, hey, maybe that's something we could do in Tucumcari. We could do a Ren Faire and people would come to us. And you go, you know, I said, to be honest, it's not really that big of a thing. It's kind of like, you know, it kind of goes in the same category as corn mazes and things like that. Not bad things at all. You know, kind of like singing together with somebody and somebody with a guitar that knows a lot of songs. And people get into singing together. Maybe that's what Lisa and I need to do for our own personal enrichment. Just to get through the days. This is really an endurance race, I tell you. All the cross country running I did as a young person was a prelude to this whole thing of you're just gonna have to run a lot because that's a whole lot of what it is. Getting to the finish line in spite of everything. So anyway. Yeah, I've been thinking of that. Anyway, Mark Gunn, he started out that way, and then I think he kind of broke off, and it was kind of songs about, he did an album, maybe even two, about cats. And of course, I don't know if he really made much money off of it at all. Really don't know. And then he got into Celtic music when that was popular, you know, off of what was some of the big things that did it. There was movies, Braveheart. What was that? Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman coming over from Ireland movie. I forget its name. Doesn't matter. Anyway, it featured a lot of Celtic music. And it was this amazing, wonderful thing. And it is cool. I still like Celtic music. Mark kind of, I don't know if he started the podcast or if he became part of it and other people wandered off and it was just left to him doing a Celtic music podcast. And it really started out as a bunch of these really good kind of Ren Fair performers. And it was kind of marketing for this stuff. And anyway, he did this for quite a while. And then, and I think he still does. I think he still does the Celtic music podcast. And so he's kind of a Celtic music DJ. He got into the scene, so it was good that he did that. And he would do his own stuff, do other people's stuff too anyway. So, and now it seems like he does tours because that's something that's it doesn't scale well, and it doesn't make it, I don't know what to say. It's always going to be small groups. Turning something into a really big group is it takes some stuff out of it. You kind of want to make something intimate. And I noticed that when Lisa and I went on the one tour that we went on to Scotland and Ireland, we brushed up against other tours, and it really tends to kind of coalesce around some personalities. You know, your tour guide is really this amazing person. It seemed like these other guys, you know, they would tell stories and you would go around in these vehicles and stay in these hotels. And there was all kinds of different guys. There's one guy who really looked very extremely Nordic. Looked like a Viking, had the whole kilt and everything, and he was out doing things, and he gave us his card. Lisa grabbed his card because she really said, that was cool, he's a cool guy, and he let us take his picture, which is funny because it's like, you know, this is he, I guess he sees that, you know, you take a picture of him, there's a good chance you're gonna go with him on one of his tours. He was a kind of a tour runner, and this was kind of his advertising. Oh, he seemed kind of like the warrior type. We only went to maybe one. I can't even remember if we did two kind of battlefields. You know, the one of the really big ones, along with us kissing the Blarney Stone and everything else that you're supposed to do. Yes, I've kissed the Blarney Stone. Anyway. And it attracts a kind of people. We even tried to pull together a couple of sing-alongs, and we did. It was mostly 60s music. And then she sang something that was really popular in the British Isles that we had never heard of. And it kind of died after that because she goes, I can't believe you guys don't know this song. This song is so popular here. We all sing this over here. And you go, we've never heard that song. And it was kind of from like, oh, the 60s and the 70s. So it was kind of like a little mini concert. And it was just for one night. This whole trip was, well, the shorter ones are called a taste of Scotland, a taste of Ireland. We went on one of their longer ones, a 15-day trip, and we so ours was called Gold, the gold version of it, and it was just a touch. You're supposed to touch several things. We touched mostly castles and things like that. Also, Lisa got a kick out of the chocolatier. It was great. She enjoyed the chocolate very much, although it was starting to get harder. We even ordered some more of the chocolate later on, and it was quite the thing. Anyway, it was a great experience. Anyway, so that seems like what Mark Gunn has fallen to. People who really get a kick out of Celtic music, he takes them around, and I think they go to some of the festivals that happen over there, you know, in Scotland, Ireland, things like that, places that are kind of known for it. And you see all these tour buses, and you're going, oh my gosh, there's, you know, how many people make their money off of these tours and people coming through? And I would think and say, what kind of tours would you have around Tucumcari? And you go, there really is nothing. Almost everything is private land, so you can't get to it. Fort Bascom, which is really the beginning of the history of Tucumcari. Tucumcari originally began with Liberty, New Mexico, which is just north of Tucumcari. And there was some people that had came there to service nearby Fort Bascom, which really wasn't that big of a thing, and it didn't last very long. But it created enough things going on that there became a little town. And it was called Liberty because when people would, when soldiers would get their time off from the post, they would go over there and they would drink and they would do entertainment and everything else. And that was what Liberty really was. Now, when the railroad came through, Liberty was boarded up and carted off down the miles that it took to get to Tucumcari. It happened to be close to Tucumcari Mountain, and that was what they named the town after, was after the name of this mountain. And anyway, so over the years, Tucumcari has been not a tourist destination, a traveler place. It really built up around being it was bigger than a whistle stop. There was actually a major junction of railroads in Tucumcari, which made the town. A lot of the town was either in servicing these people or taking care of travelers along the line. You know, people would stop at the, you know, on a train journey, they would stop and there was food to eat and things to do. And projects, you know. It ended up being the dams that formed the nearby lakes were projects that people worked on. Some of them were just projects to keep people busy. I swear, The Conservation Corps was really big around this area. A lot of people during the Depression, the government put them to work on these things. But being this, it really didn't end up being this really, this is our lives. It's like, no, nothing really all that amazing. And the town that grew up around it is a slowly dying, yeah, for a lack of anything in particular to be. We've got some hotels. Got some places to eat, mostly the chains. That's about it. When they go, so is this where all the farmers come together? And they go, no. And they go, farming was tried here, and can I say it was predominantly a failure. What farming does go on around here is mostly growing alfalfa to feed animals. I don't know really how interesting alfalfa is. I actually bought some alfalfa hales to sorry, bales to lift up my geodesic dome. So it was more pleasant to be under when I was living under it. And then my poor dome started having problems. I used PVC pipe. It was supposed to be cheap, and it was. But it melted. It didn't really melt, but it really contorted the actual things. If I had any money and interest, which I'm trying to be more careful with all this because I can't just do things. I don't have all the ton of money that I did. Well, actually I do, but I think Lisa and I are getting a little more cognizant of the fact that we need to hang on to our resources as much as we can. But I'm a little jagged of trying to get prepared for the future. Make sure we have good all of our equipment that's going to tend to wear out, being replaced. This has got a better vehicle now that it's going to last her for a while. Because I'm putting so many miles on these, on mine. So, yeah, I really don't. I don't think badly of any of these people. Mark Gunn, for instance, like I was talking about him. And I hope it makes him a fun little living. And I hope he enjoys it. And, do I hope he gets married? He says, yeah. And you go, so how would it do with the kids? And you're going, you know what? It's okay with the kids. Everybody says, oh, well, you have to settle down. You can't do these things anymore because you have to do things for your kids. Oh, you got to send them to school and stuff like that. And you go, says, I'm not so sure if these kinds of experiences for kids and for young people aren't better than other sorts of education. Ah, that brings to mind Papa Neutrino. He kind of collected people around him. It's interesting. They did a documentary on him, and he was quite the guy. And he was still working the system when he died. He had gotten he had made this big raft. It was called the Son of Town, I think. And he went across the Atlantic Ocean on it. And he became quite a thing based on that. That kind of tickled, not on a big level, but on a little level, the fancy of people who were just like, I just want to get away. He was a quote-unquote homeless guy. He was a busker of a sort. They did a circus, a traveling circus in Mexico. And he had his kids, and they all did kind of circus performer sorts of things. One of the girls really kind of got into the whole thing. And I think she was still doing it the last time I saw them, although they have, everybody around it has faded off into obscurity. This was a documentary made by a bunch of, you know, and it wasn't that it was amateur particularly, but it was just, anyway, so, yeah. And you go, what about Mark Gunn? What about Papa Neutrino? He ended up saying, this is really how to solve some of the problems of our lives. Is he pictured a lot of people living on rafts, purpose-built rafts, better than rafts. You know, it sounds kind of dingy. Anyway, and he wasn't afraid to bring people along in his adventures. He had what he called kids, but it was mostly just drifter kids, or some lady and her kids. And he would kind of, I don't think there was ever any formal adoption of anybody. These kids were just part of his life. You know, anybody from a social services aspect could just freak out and say no, but then again, you know, life is so tenuous to begin with, and social service situations are so, you know, they're all caught up in places. If you move around enough, people don't catch up to you, particularly. Anyway, so the wonderful part, the most heartening part of like a guy like Papa Neutrino was how much people just kind of smiled. And I don't even know if they really helped him out particularly, but didn't give him a bunch of crap for the life he was living. And for what he was doing, I remember a guy living in a boat, and everybody said, oh, he's got a horrible boat. They said, and apparently, there's just this drifter. And there was some news stories about him, because search and rescue had to go out. I think they helped him once, but he kind of shooed him off. And then he disappeared. You know, the boat, I don't know if the boat capsized, if it finally sunk. And I can imagine that kind of being like Papa Neutrino. I don't want to put Mark Gunn in there. He's a good guy. And I'm not saying Papa Neutrino wasn't a good guy. He had a good heart. He took care of some people. The kids, after they grew up, and they interviewed a few of them, because I don't think some of them wanted to be interviewed. One of them was just a regular guy. He was living in a house. And I think he had a pretty typical job. And he didn't really speak with nostalgia about the life, although he didn't seem really angry or upset about any of it. But yeah, he said, yeah, it was kind of like a phase of life, and he was okay. And I think he was even kind of grateful for somebody taking him in. And they said, yeah, Papa Neutrino had his whole philosophy. He would bring everybody. He would bring all these kids around. I don't know if they qualify as a captive audience, but maybe they did. And he would just philosophize at them. He said, oh, yes, he taught us this. He taught us about how important this was, how important that was. And I don't think he ever had children himself, but he took in children. He tended to take in children more than anything else. You know, for all we know, he was a pedophile. And that was his thing. Hopefully it wasn't like, oh, yeah, for all we know, part of his thing was sexual gratification on kids. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know, that's disgusting. You go, yeah, it is. It's terrible. You're not supposed to do that to kids. I don't know, to be honest. They all survived. They were poor as door mice. So all the Appalachian people up there picking on their on whatever instruments they could pull together. Papa Neutrino is kind of a interesting middle case. I find myself attracted to these kinds of people. Anyway. So, I don't know. Lisa, my dear, wonderful Lisa Jane, wants a certain level of comfort that comes from making a certain amount of money. And you don't want to aggrandize what most people would consider to be poverty. But the system doesn't like poverty. I find the most interesting characters, my friends who he drifted on, but we touched each other. I mean, our lives ran together for a little while. And I think he was in desperate need of some company. And he was hoping that I was going to do that. And I was like, I'm sorry. I got too much going on. And he had a nice little piece of land. And, it was an abandoned attempt at something much greater. Let me tell you, they had done an underground house, but it had washed out. And so the people that were associated with it left. And didn't want anything to do with it anymore. And it's still there. He says, do I know where it is? Yeah, I know where it is. You go, could you go and like camp out there? I go, sure. He says, you know, there would be, I don't think anybody would actually stop me. And there was some people that, it was interesting, I was with TK one afternoon. I would spend a little bit of time, maybe a few hours with him before I had to go off and go to sleep in the boat. And he would tell me stories, and he'd sing songs. He was a busker. He went out and he busked, and people would give him money, and he would use it. He was slowly cleaning up his life, I think. I don't think he was drinking as much as he had in the past, although he still did. And he was a marijuana kind of guy. You know, this was part of his coping mechanism for just life. We all have different coping mechanisms. And I've got some TK recordings. If you go up my if you search on me, where you see here this recording, or no, I don't have this on Internet Explorer. Anyway, if you go to Internet Archive and there's going to be a little TK recording sessions, and there's not very many of them. We weren't around each other very long. And he was just a guy, you know, he was a hard guy to keep in touch. He tried to do it with cell phones, but I don't think he could hang on to his cell phones very readily because he just didn't have the money. And which is sad because, you know, there's government programs that will provide a cell phone to you and will pay for your service. But I think it makes too many demands probably. And so he didn't keep up with it. And which is a shame, you know. That could have kept him in contact with other people for longer periods of time. He actually left behind journals, and I'm often wondering once I get out to the crash site if I'll drive out to the place, and you know, I'm really quite not you know, I don't want to take the journals from the place. I would love to somehow duplicate them and put them back, because I think it's part of him and that place and things like that. You know, I don't want to turn it into some kind of a weird museum, but I feel weird about possessing those things. I don't know what his fate is. He was. You know, I don't know if he was all that old. It's hard to tell sometimes. I think he's older than I am, but not significantly so. Anyway, I've always felt some kind of a weird allure toward these kinds of things. And, you know, you go, well, then you should be an anthropologist. You go, well, not professionally. You know, I don't want to. You can certainly make this kind of an amateur study, and there's plenty of amateur anthropologists. I think that a lot of these documentary filmmakers really end up being the modern rendition of that. I think who wrote Walden? Henry David Thoreau? Was that him? I've read it. And I think he was more of an anthropologist, an amateur one. He kind of turned it into a curiosity. You know, and he published this thing, and people said, you know what, he didn't really live out there. You know, he had people come through. He was mostly getting money out of people to come and see how he lived and do stuff like that. And you go, what? I see that all the time. These guys who have these YouTube channels now that show you how to do this and how to do that and how to live on your own out here in the middle of nowhere. And you go, yeah. And it's always been mind expanding for me. It became the whole idea of what the possibilities were. Now I am married to Lisa Jane Tomplay. I have to keep up with the kind of lifestyle that Lisa will tolerate. Now that I've got Matt, it's also the kind of lifestyle that Matt has become, to which he has become accustomed. And it's like, you know, someday hopefully Matt's going to live with somebody else and I'm going to do other things. You know, great thing about Matt is he comes with money. If your troubles are predominantly financial, or if that's one of your big worries, Matt is a wonderful companion because he's pretty inexpensive fella. He doesn't have a lot of extravagant needs. I would have to say that if you got him one of those cell phone based things, like I always thought that if Lisa passed away and it was just me and Matt, I would probably get very creative because that's what I do. I'm very creative. And me and Matt might go traveling, go native. I don't know. Although Matt doesn't like me very much. And we've been reminded again very, very much that Matt doesn't do very well emotionally. And so he's a tough guy to deal with. And you go, and do I understand? Sort of. And that's tricky. So anyway, you know what? This is going to be a Cohen Meander. I've been tending to make more Cohen Meander recordings. So if you want to listen to some of the TK recordings, and I'm not saying they're very good, but you know, to say he was a real person and he had stories to tell. And he was really quite good on the guitar and a singer. And that was his thing and that was his life. And he went and he did this. It makes me think of the Rainbow Gathering out close to Taos here in New Mexico. And he was a participant in that kind of thing. And I don't know how organic it really was, but it seemed like if TK was involved with it, it was probably a little bit of hippie organic, because that was kind of him. Anyway, so you can go back and you can listen to his recordings, which are in another section of my stuff. But I might add a lot more to it over time, because this part of my life is boring. And do I make a lot of money? I do. Do I care to do this? No. You know, do I want to do something else someday? Yes. Anyway, so... Thank you for listening. Let's go ahead and cut this short. I'll leave you with the priestly blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance toward you and give you peace.